You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with a guest episode for the Business Broker Growth Show. Today I have with me Matt Frischa. He is the owner of the Transworld Business Advisors of LaGrange, Illinois. Matt, welcome to the Business Broker Growth Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm excited. I think it's going to be a fun conversation. I know it's going to be a fun conversation based on when we've spoken in the past. You have a very interesting background I want to get into. You've grown the group that you have with plans on growing even more. I want to talk about the industries that you see happening and where the trends are and generalist versus industry specific or picking a niche and all of those topics. For years before getting into business brokerage, you were in corporate America. You worked for Disney, ESPN, and then you got into home healthcare. What was that transition like? Because I love to hear this because it's going to lead into how you got into business brokerage. So you leave corporate life, you get into home healthcare, you start that, you run that for quite some time, and then what?
Yeah, so I just got sick of driving downtown in corporate America here in Illinois. Traffic is absolutely awful. I was seeing my kids a very small amount of time. I just took the leap, like right as I was shortly after I turned 40 and said, you know, listen, I got to try this, even if I crash and burn. I got to try to just have entrepreneurship. It's in my blood. My family's had different types of small businesses. So I picked one. My mom's a nurse. It was nice that I was able to work that business with her. So bought that business and pretty much made every mistake in the book in the first year and a half when I had that business and ran that business because it was, you know, trying to do it somewhat semi-absentee. And then learned a tremendous amount through that business ownership. It was like the Navy SEAL training of business ownership, I feel like. And it was great. It was great. When it worked, it really worked. It was, you know, helping people, love helping people in that regard. But it was staffing. You know, we had 120 employees on our roster and multiple admins. And I think I was great where I was like, look, I'm not going back to corporate America. I really enjoy this. And then at that point, when I took the leap, I ran into somebody from Transworld at like a franchise show. And I was like, you do what? And they're like, oh, we sell businesses. And I'm like, that's the business is selling businesses. I was kind of like, wow. Okay. Well, so then they connected me with somebody locally here in the Chicagoland area. And then we got it listed. And then 18 months after that, it was not a short period of time. Then I got across the finish line and then got into this, but was able to say, I owned a business, I sold a business, you know, all those things. And we did use an SBA loan to buy, it was a franchise business. We used an SBA loan to buy another territory when I had the senior care business. So could also say to people, listen, I've been through the SBA process. I've had a loan, I paid off a loan, all that other fun stuff.
So a couple things going back. So you said you made a lot of mistakes, every mistake possible in the beginning of the home healthcare business. And the part that I'm curious about is you said you tried the absentee owner route. Were you working at the same time or you're like, I'm just going to buy a business that prints money and it should run by itself?
Boy, I wish I did. That would have been a lot easier, hopefully. But no, it was, I was still on my corporate job and I was like, I will try to do this semi-absentee and, you know, got somebody in place to help out with that. And I think everybody tried their best in that regard, but it just wasn't, after a year or so, it just wasn't necessarily fitting, but it forced me to buy this other territory, this other business that did have cash flow and did have, you know, clients, caregivers, all that other fun stuff. And that was like the best thing I ever did because we did hockey stick growth after that based on finally, oh, this is what it's like to have to have cash flow coming in and to manage people and all that other fun stuff. So it was good in that regard.
So Matt, where do you see that now? And I still want to go back. I want to talk about some of the business and the business broker introduction that you had, the exiting your business. But where do you see that now with people coming to you that are in corporate and they want to buy a business and they're trying to play that game. Do you see that very much? Buying the absentee business, I just buy it and it just, you know, runs. If you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now, back to the episode. So Matt, where do you see that now? And I still want to go back. I want to talk about some of the business and the business broker introduction that you had, the exiting your business. But where do you see that now with people coming to you that are in corporate and they want to buy a business and they're trying to play that game? Do you see that very much? Buying the absentee business, I should just buy it and it just, you know, runs?
Yeah, that's where buyer fatigue comes in. Because I'd say 50% plus are, they don't know any better, right? So I don't blame them for like this wonderful view of, I'll just kind of do something on the side. And, you know, truly there are some businesses that are structured like that. So it's not to say it doesn't exist. It's just a lot of what we deal with, because we do lower middle market, but we do a lot of Main Street. And I do this because down here, so to speak, right, where it does require an owner to be involved. And I just think it's all setting expectations, right? Because I think we're getting a lot better at saying, hey, it's great. Like, it's great that you can get access to money. It's great that you can, you know, buy a business. But if you truly don't have 20, 30 hours a week to, and even at the beginning, maybe like a full-time job to understand the business, we're not saying that you're a bad owner or you're a bad person for trying to get into this, but you, like, I don't want to be the recipient of somebody failing either, right? If that's the case. So, but some people are determined. They're very determined. No, I got this. I can figure this out. And, you know, we try to steer them as best we can.
And one of the topics that's on my list, because I want to talk to you about it, we'll talk about it later, which is the gurus and the content and the things out there telling those buyers how easy it is to buy a business and just set it up and run. But we'll talk about that later. So you, home healthcare, you go, you exit successfully. Yay, 18 months, not yay. Like, that's not a good amount of time. Even I know that. I know that you didn't have the greatest experience when trying to exit, and that inspired you. Like, when you found out that you could do business brokerage, and you're just like, you know, there's different categories of what trigger people to want to be a broker. Yours was maybe not the best experience.
Yeah, I'll caveat that too. My broker's a great guy. He's a great human being. He did get me across the finish line. I think it was just more of, I learned a lot about my expectations or what I would expect as a seller, and just didn't feel like I was getting as much communication. And, you know, it is a slog sometimes, right? Some listings, it's like, wow, you know, you're really trying your best, and it's just, some just stuff just doesn't happen, right? So, but at least I pointed out some things in that process where I was like, you know, I think I can tweak that experience to make it potentially better for the you know, the seller part of it that was tied in with it. So that is what inspired me, because I love that it was B2B. I mean, I've been in sales forever, so I like that part as well. And the whole, okay, I think I can get the machine going, you know, to really get the volume needed to really make something happen on a more regular basis. So that's my takeaway from it. I mean, there are certainly some things that just, it's just, everything is communication with this. It's a very high touch sales situation, right? What's happening? There's a lot of, especially what I deal with, a lot of hand holding for people. What's happening? Why are we doing this? What's going on now? You know, is this fair? Is this not fair? Does this seem right? You know, because a lot of these folks, you only do this once, right? I mean, maybe you're an entrepreneur that you buy and sell 100 businesses, whatever it is. I mean, but that's really, really the exception to the rule. So it's a very, there's one attorney we work with, and he says, you know, my psychology degree comes in way more than my law degree, you know, when I do this, you know, just to make sure that experience is in, it doesn't have to be enjoyable, but at least is understandable for what's happening.
understandable in the expectation set, and you talking about your sales experience, and I know from my experience with sales with business is that the higher the price point of whatever you're selling, usually the more sophisticated the buyer and the easier the buyer is. When you sell a $500 thing to somebody who, you know, they might question that $500 thing like crazy. You sell a $50,000 thing, whoever's going to buy that's like, okay, this sounds good. Where do we send the money? Like, you know, it's just a, if you just really look at how that works. Yep. And so I'm guessing too, with what you deal with, especially in the lower market, the main street, that means so much more. That seller definitely has all their eggs in that basket. They also don't understand the process. They're also maybe looking at the price tag of a broker and thinking, what am I getting for this? And then they're just like really heavily involved and kind of, you know, holding on tightly versus, let's say, somebody who's selling a much larger business. And they're just like, okay, here's the process. We understand it. What do you need from us? Hopefully it's a little bit smoother. So I'm guessing that dynamic. Now, here's what I think is fascinating. And I want to hear your opinion on this. You go into home healthcare. Your mom's in the medical field. Home healthcare is very regulated, licensing, all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, you actually are doing home healthcare. Then you get into business brokerage, which basically you just show up, start helping people exit businesses, theoretically. How did you find that? Like, going from this like corporate world where things are very regulated, big corporate, like, you know, with Disney, and then home healthcare, which is very regulated, and then business brokerage.
Yeah. So I think that's what's all part of the experience, what helped me with this, right? Because I was like, to your point, I'm like, so what else do I need to know here to do this, right? Like, what am I missing? And you find out right away, like, you're not missing much, right? And then what that was also the exciting part to me is when it finally clicked to be like, wow, not always in a good way, but like the bar is pretty low for this, right? In regards to that. And I'm not saying that there's a bunch of bad brokers running around there. I'm just saying that they're maybe less informed, or maybe they're not doing it full time, or maybe they're commercial realtors trying to sell businesses, whatever it is. And you just think about the like 6 billion realtors that are out there. And then you think about there's like 4 business brokers that you may know, if that, right? So that part, once you get that reality and you're like, and you really are doing the right things. And I, my tiny plug for Transworld is at least they have training and there's a system, mm-hmm. and I'm a pretty good rule follower. Right. So for me, it's like, here's the box. Like, let me teach you what's in the box, stay within the box and you'll probably have success. And then I, as a corporate person that was in corporate America, it's like perfectly suited for that type of scenario, at least for me, at least my perception of it.
Yeah. And I think it is fascinating. It's something I mention all the time on the show. It's just wild to me. That's the nicest way I can put it. How unregulated the world of business brokerage is, considering this once in a lifetime transaction that, you know, is generally the case that you're a part of, and how many things go into it and how many things could go wrong. And then who could just, you know, in most states just show up and be a business broker. So I'm glad that there's some framework with Transworld, which is great. So you got some kind of process and playbook. And then where, you know, I know that you're also big on education training through like IBBA and
MBBI here locally. Yeah. Ours in our kind of area. Absolutely. And then also just there's ongoing, like anything to, I'm always learning. I'm learning every day, right? So if there's books or there's podcasts or there's, you know, just like this, you know, like there's things that you should be enriching yourself, you know, on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis, on a bi-weekly basis, whatever it is of like, or, and also learning every transaction you're learning, like, boy, that was interesting. You know what I mean? We had to work through that. So, you know, you become a loosely using the word expert as you start to do, you know, volume and really start to get out there, you know?
Yeah. So it's a good segue because my next question is regarding other brokers that you see. So you're in your 6th year with Transworld on the broker side, like having started this up. You now have what, 10 people on the team. Where is that an important part of your team dynamic, and where do you, you know, are you choosing people who are open and want to learn and curious and like, you know, where they're curious, but also follow the rules and the process? What do you look for as you grow the team?
That's a really good question, because at the beginning, I was like so excited as a, because you're, you know, it's like a realtor's office, right? So it's kind of like it's a 1099 employee. So you're just excited for anybody that's interested in doing this like at all. And if they got like some really good sales experience behind them and like, and I can teach them and I can show them and I can teach them. Now, as the years kind of go on, it's like you start to realize that people that are curious, that are asking good questions, that have, like, we have people that on our team now that have been an SBA lender, right? So they know the backstory of how to do a recast and tied in with that, or they've at least hopefully owned a business in some regard as well, because that is huge to know, like, well, what's it like when you don't know if you're going to make payroll the next week, right? And like having to live and die by, you know, what you do, or just also where you're at and whatever stage you're at in your life. You know, like, this is a tough business for somebody that needs a check every week, right? So like, if you're chasing a check, this may not, I mean, the runway is long, but once you're in flight, you know, it's pretty great once you're in flight.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, thinking about you and that evolution of like, hiring people, let's just get people in here. Hey, you're 1099, good luck. And then realizing like, that model, it also doesn't work in real estate either. But like, there's a lot more nurturing and growth and mentorship that's sure. needed for you and growing this, especially for the number of people willing to get into this versus the number of people willing to be a realtor while they also work, or just, you know, they like houses, you know, whatever that might be. So this is a different game, and how much that experience, but also it's interesting because it's not just one set of experience. Like, you have to have owned a business, you have to have done this. It's like whatever bucket your experience would fit in.
I think, honestly, when I had the senior care business, it's a huge learning lesson. And I don't mean to generalize, but it's just people, right? It's like showing people like, why did you do that? Like, walk me through why you did that. You know what I mean? Or are there teaching moments, you know, that can tie in with this? Cause I just hear about this too, where it's like, you know, oh, we're going to pay him this. And it's like, okay. But even for somebody in senior care, like, can they even live on that wage to like, and if they can't, like, what's the incentive for them to like show up every day? And this is going back to like, even the Disney days, right? It's like, there's these people that are part of certain things, they'll run through walls for you if they really feel there's a sense of like, wow, like there's something here. There's a sense of community. There's, you know, culture. I can learn. You know, these people are open to teaching me some things. And it sounds so simple, but so many people just don't do that. Like, it's mind-boggling to me sometimes.
Yeah. I see a lot of leaders and many owners who are just like, well, people need a job and want a job, and they know they got to get paid, and that should be enough, right? Like, just get them in there and that should be good enough. And then they're always surprised when they have turnover or people who are just not putting in the results because people need more. And I think, you know, fundamentally too, I learned this years and years ago, is that people will do what's in their best interest, not your best interest as a business owner, right? They will do what's in their best interest. Hopefully it aligns. If it aligns, it's magic, but they will do what's in their best interest. And so you always got to make sure that does line up and there's some kind of intersection, or at least it's on the same path, and that people understand what they're a part of. It's why I saw, especially when the pandemic hit, the best companies who did the best through the pandemic were the ones with the strongest culture, because there was some reason that everyone wanted to just band together and, you know, overcome all of the challenges during the pandemic, working remote, whatever that might be. And if it's not a strong culture or direction, then it all kind of falls apart. And especially with what you do, right? Because everyone's, like you said, it's 1099. They're in it, and they've got to have a good reason to be in it.
And listen, when it's good, it's really good, right? When it's like, when it's like, oh gosh, like this is a lot of like, I feel like I'm spinning my wheels. I don't know where I'm going with this exactly. And being able to get through those times, and it can, there's even through IBBA has all these like, you know, videos on this as well. It's like, it's kind of a lonely business, right? You're kind of your own, you're on your own planet, and either you love that and you wake up every day and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to do more of that. Or you're like, I don't know, I kind of want to be in an office and talk to people and like see what's going on. So if you, I think you start to figure out that out really quick.
And for you and your team, you're in an office, you have an office, do they come in? Can they come in? What kind of dynamic have you created?
Yeah, so mostly they can certainly come in. They can use any of the stuff here, the copy or whatever it is that ties in with it. I don't require any of them to come in. We have one meeting a week, and I try to keep that meeting to 30 minutes. That meeting is remote. But we're trying more on a quarterly basis to really get together, whether it's lunch or something like that, of like what's, you know, but I think really it's also encouraging people to call, pick up the phone and call each other, you know, like, what did you just experience on that deal? And that's really what we're talking about on a week to week basis is like, boy, this wacky thing happened. I hope you don't have to deal with that, you know, like, or what did we learn from that? Or why is this stuck right now? Why are we not, why is this one not moving? You know, or what's happening here exactly. So I think that's the best is sort of just sharing experiences and making sure people understand that we've, at least I and my business partner, Tony, like we probably have been in that scenario at some point. So let's just talk through it. And like, how did we solve that the last time around?
Yeah, it's tough too, because, you know, my system minded side wants to capture all that and create a database or system or even an internal podcast or something where there's like the sharing of it or the access. Yeah. And then 100%. Like that's good, but also it's tough because with what you do and how varied the transaction are, it's like some overlap, and then some just like, I'm in this thing, here's my situation. It's like almost like on the spot, like help versus like knowledge database help. You know,
yeah,
it's tough.
And don't get me wrong, I built an agent for like simple questions, you know, that like, hey, go to this thing, type in a question, something could come up, you know. But inevitably, that is, and I'm jumping ahead here, so I apologize. But that's, I also think, why the high touch part of it, like for even all the AI and everything that's out there, it's like, it's a very high touch sales environment to get it across the finish line. So, I don't necessarily feel worried per se that, you know, we're going to go away tomorrow, but maybe I'm totally wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong. We'll definitely touch on that later when we talk about the kind of the future of business brokerage, but I don't think you're wrong either. Now, one of the things I alluded to in the intro that I know we've spoken about is specialists versus generalists, being a generalist as a business broker versus like marrying a niche or picking something specific you do. Like what's, when you think in your mind, and then as obviously as you have your team, as you bring on brokers, like what's the thought process that you have?
Yeah, so great question. We are more of generalists than our office, but what we're starting to notice are there's three or four categories where we see a lot of buyer flow that like sort of like if we could get 15 more of these listings, we probably could sell them a lot quicker because we know that there's large pools of buyers that are looking for these types of businesses. Now, there are certain categories of people that we've bumped into as other brokers that, for instance, we have a guy in this market that sells dental practices, and he's really, really good at selling dental practices. And he has worked in the dental industry, and we flailed around with a dental a listing or two in the beginning. And it's like, let's just stop doing that. Like if we get one of those, just like, just give it to that guy. Like he knows what he's doing. He knows all the docs. He's got it on lockdown. That's great. There's another one that deals with very like tech businesses. So he really focuses on tech businesses. He's, you know, flown to China and has all like, I mean, international, like all this great stuff. And I've come to him and said, hey, listen, what do you think of X, Y, and Z? Or if buyers are looking for those types of businesses, you know, I'd send them over to him. So there's somebody in our market that just does restaurants. Not a huge favorite category at all of those, but hallelujah and amen if he wants to take those listings and, you know, is really good at those and focuses on those. So I'd say, you know, the four categories that are, at least today, are hot and that we seem to be doing a lot of our, you know, small manufacturing seems to happen quite a bit, service-based businesses. But, you know, talking the ones that everybody, you know, says are a boring business. I don't even know what a boring business is, but it's HVAC, plumbing, sprinkler fitting, all that other fun stuff as well. Healthcare. So back to whether it's home health or med spas, or, you know, we have a staffing company that does PT, OT, speech therapy, things like that. And then weirdly, then education too. So daycares, tutoring centers, you name it as well. Lately, I'm seeing a lot of those four categories. Now, do we do distribution? Do we do other things that are tied in with it? Sure. But we've seen a lot of transactions in those four categories that seem to come at us more often.
Yeah, and what's fascinating, and I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg, but one of the things that's interesting is those all the ones that you mentioned could be helped with some level of tech and AI, but they cannot be replaced with it, right? Like the boring businesses, the reason they're boring is because they don't make the headlines on IPOs and exits and Silicon Valley founders, right? Like that's other than in the industry, when somebody does well exiting, let's say an HVAC or a roofing company, outside of the industry, nobody cares, right? Doesn't make the cool, sure, sexy headlines. But it's interesting to think that all those, like, you know, AI is not going to replace daycare, right? Like, it's just not, or healthcare, or, you know, I'm just thinking of the list here. And so it's fascinating that, you know, that's what people are looking, because they know that that's not going to be a you know, not going to go anywhere. Sure. And I love the fact that, you know, if I was like a business broker, I would have the same thought as you, which is some of these little more difficult, or do I want to learn this, or is there a good partner? Can I refer it, get a referral fee, let them do an amazing job? And generally that just comes down to, do I have enough leads and you know, stuff in the pipeline where I don't need, sure, to like hold on to each listing for dear life?
Yeah. So, and that's the freedom, is when you finally get to that point where it's, I want to help you. I don't have to help you. I'd really like to help you. And if this makes sense for both of us, and what I'm realizing is, and if you're realistic about what the value is, then, and your books are clean, or, you know, it's very easy to understand, like no problem. This is going to be great. You know, we're gonna have a good relationship to, you know, have a positive experience.
Now, one of the things that I find fascinating about the trans world model, and I had Andy Cagnetta, he was the second guest on the show, it's the second episode, and he educated me a lot about this co-broker thing, which, mm-hmm, I just figured when I looked at this industry before, you know, getting into it more and more, I just figured that was a thing. I didn't realize it wasn't a thing. Like, buyers are just on their own, and the brokers represent the sellers for the most part. Right? Let's just say the standard model. Like, but with Transworld, it's generally a co-broker kind of mentality. And where do you see that working well? And where do you see that, you know, as a challenge, maybe when you're trying to be involved with a transaction on one or the other side? Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts. And in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in four ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember, you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation. Kind of mentality, and where do you see that working well, and where do you see that, you know, as a challenge, maybe when you're trying to be involved with a transaction on one or the other side?
It's another good question. So in Florida specifically, they kind of have their own MLS specifically for businesses. So it's more prevalent in that state just because it's a written rule, right? It's not even like an unwritten rule, right? It's sort of like a, listen, we're kind of expecting that we're going to have this part of it. Less in the Midwest, to be completely honest, in Illinois, where we're 90% we're on the sell side, right? And I would say it doesn't happen very often where the buyer comes with their own broker. Now, to your point, we're happy to co-broker. It's just the part that is annoying to us is like, are you co-brokering, or are you just kind of throwing a name over the fence and like saying at the end, like, I want my fee, right? Because, mm-hmm, there's just so much involved. And I find that, yes, co-broker, go broke, right? Like absolutely open to that. But I think sometimes where it's like, to your point, like, I'm happy to pay you a referral fee, but if you're truly going to be involved in the deal and you're going to represent the buyer, well, that's one thing. Because a lot of times I've seen this also with commercial real estate brokers, right? Where it's like, you're probably a great commercial real estate broker, but you're not really a good business broker, but somewhere it's led to be like, I can do both, right? But it's like, but we're bringing the lender to the table. We're talking through due diligence. We're setting up the data rooms. We're sort of like, so where are you in this transaction as part of this co-brokering that really is part of that, right? So I think we're getting more granular in the, yes, of course, if it makes sense to co-broker, let's do it. I just need to understand how involved you're going to be to justify that, 60-40 split or whatever is going to happen, you know, to get somebody across the finish line. And I'm less amazed most of the time of like, wow, that, you know, that broker really represented that buyer like nobody's business. You know what I mean? It happens. It just doesn't happen as often.
Yeah. And it's fascinating for me to think about, you know, how long will it take that to shift? Will it ever shift? Will it change? Will it become an industry norm, like in residential real estate, where it's just the thing, right? There's two brokers, the seller pays for it. the listing broker is the one that splits it, right, from their side. And so it's interesting to think, and then, you know, who's on board with that already and who's resistant to it. But I, you know, understand what you're saying. It's gotta be tough where someone's like, okay, so, you know, let's co-broker this. And you have to have that truthful, you know, maybe tough conversation of like, okay, but what are you going to do for your part? You know, as a broker with the buyer, like, are you really going to do this, or are you just putting your name on it? Cause that's a different model.
What's happening now is we do have one really great buy side deal going on where the buyer is paying us a small, it's a larger company. It's a $30 million company. But the buyer is paying us a small retainer to just, I want them to have some skin in the game. Right. And they pay a success fee, you know, if we get them what they needed. So it's 100 times easier for me to go out to market and say, hey, don't worry about it. Like, I got all my fees taken care of over here. I want to talk to you because I have, you know, we have a really good qualified buyer in a very specific category that we would like, that is interested in looking at companies like yours. Would you like to have a conversation? That is a way easier conversation than, you know, how am I going to get my fee, right? When we start doing this. So if I take that off the table, then it's like, wow, okay, yeah, great. Like, but let's go. Let's talk about it.
That's great. And, you know, I think too, if we're talking about the buy side, obviously one of the challenge with the whole dynamic, I mentioned it earlier, we were talking about different topic, but is, you know, the buyers and the gurus and the courses they buy and where they think, you know, how they're going to structure it or what they're going to do. and I'm sure that's challenging for you, like it is for a lot of brokers out there with those kind of buyers.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't fault, because I don't think all the information is bad that they're getting. I just think some of it is bad because I got a due diligence team over here. They're going to help me. They're going to check every box for me. And what's wrong, the part that is just maddening is that I need a business that's this big and I need it to have all these things and it's got to check all these boxes. But I've never maybe run a business that big, but suddenly like, it's a do or die situation for me to have this, right? Or there's searchers that are out there that are they're getting paid to go out and find businesses for somebody that's backing them. And maybe they're good at moving money around, like they worked in private equity or they, you know, they have a great pedigree from a great university or whatever it is that ties in with it. They're probably extremely smart people, but if they've never managed anything and their first step into business ownership is a fairly large business with potentially a fairly large staff, that is a recipe for disaster, I would think, because you could be really good at this, the back end, you know, like in your office, you know, doing spreadsheets and all this, but how do you interact? How does that work? You know, so I'm not saying it's wrong. It happens every day. It's nothing that I think I'm going to change, but I think you will see more. You know, I think we may see the it right-siding itself after a bit, you know, for those types of scenarios, because I don't know if all those scenarios are successful. But I do see people that are putting good operators together with money people. And if you're a good operator and you have some good experience, well, okay, well, great. You know, you're probably the right person for this business. It's just that's what's fascinating to me. It's just fascinating to know like how all those pieces fit together versus the person that sometimes they're buying a job or sometimes they're, you know, like they are buying something that's tied to construction. They've never done construction bidding. I'm not saying they're not smart people that could maybe figure it out, but boy, that learning curve is going to be just so much longer. And you know, you may succeed. I don't know, but it's just going to be a lot tougher for you to potentially go that route.
Yeah, and I know from reading some of the, let's just call them guru books, and consuming a bunch of that content, I think it gets you excited. Everything's possible. Not that it's super easy, but it's easy enough. Like anybody should be able to do this. And you know, if you follow this process, but to your point, and you had this experience going from corporate to the home healthcare, is there's a big difference at working for a large company as one part of one department running one thing to having your own business where you're in charge of everything, right? Like, and usually what happens is if anyone's read the Michael Gerber E-Myth Revisited book or anything like that, it's like all of a sudden you got to wear all the hats, and usually someone's good at one of the hats. Let's say like your finance person who's good at moving money or collecting money or search, like whatever it is. That's great, except what about accounting? What about HR? What about hiring and training and all the stuff you were talking about when you're in the home healthcare? And you know, all of that. And to get to 120 employees is amazing. It takes a lot of different skills. And then, you know, if you buy something that's at any scale like that, it's like you instantly have all these things to manage. And you just, it's one thing to build it because you've learned it along the way. It's another one to buy it and just be thrown right into that operation with payroll and stuff like that. Like I can only imagine.
And there's two schools of thought to that, where first of all, these folks that are selling you a course, that is the business, is they're selling you a course, right? So, but then the second part of that is I understand where the methodology is like, well, it's bigger business might have less risk if we lose a client or two. It's like that's fair. That does make sense. But then also what you're on the hook for, I just see a lot of people driving by these like smaller businesses, right? It's too small. I don't like it. There's too, you know, I want this. I want this. I want this. And then I think like, you know, well, something was working in this business if they've been around for 20 or 30 years. Do I think every business is amazing? Maybe not, but there's just some really good strategic people that understand maybe if it's just an asset sale, like some taking those assets and being able to do something with them that maybe the former seller wasn't able to do. Does happen. Now, I'm not saying it's not Pollyanna. I'm not saying like, oh, you only sell on potential. Obviously, you want track record, you want to see books, you want to see all that stuff. But I just see some things that I'm like, huh, you know, for the right person, it could be a good opportunity.
Yeah. And it's all about finding that right person and what's the right price for the right person. So yeah, I think that's fascinating. And it is a great segue because I have some stuff I want to talk to you about, but we'll go into the broker growth tips. So let's talk about the strategies of things. You've been at this for 6 years. You got into it. You have the benefit of the trans world and kind of the network and the support instead of just, you know, going out there and trying to start your own from like zero. So you had some benefit, but obviously you've learned a lot and then gotten to the point where you have a team of 10 and potentially growing. So what would you put on the list that you found works well, either that works well, like the do or the don't do list for broker growth?
Yeah, that's a great question. So three things that I think, first and foremost, so sometimes we take like a spray and pray model, right? Where it isn't just one thing, right? People think, oh, it's just referral sources or it's direct marketing or it's networking or it's a lot of all of that, right? It's not, if you have deal flow happening, you're probably doing all of that. You're doing maybe some direct mail. You're doing some really direct marketing. You're maybe using a great referral source for whether it's wealth advisors or lenders or accountants, whatever it is that like they're talking to business owners all the time. And then just general networking, right? You're showing up at the right places, you're shaking hands, you're, you know, if you're doing some of all of that, I think it's really important. I wish there was a silver bullet, there's not. So you have to like do a little bit of everything, right? Back to what I talked about, find verticals that have a lot of buyers, right? That are really important that you feel that you can be a part of. Now, maybe we should be specializing, right? I'm fine the way we're doing this right now, but that could be an answer to some of this of like, there's a gentleman that I know that can't, you know, also you speak to your background, right? Somebody that came from manufacturing that's like, wow, I have all these buddies that have these businesses that are in manufacturing and like, I could really speak to that. Now, I know home care pretty well, right? So when people come in and have a home care listing, I can speak directly to that, right? Like if you say, oh my gosh, well, you know, the pandemic, you know, it was really crazy. Like pandemic for me was like shooting fish in a barrel. Like that's, I don't accept that excuse, right? So there's, no. but I know that could have been a problem for some people during that time frame. And then the final thing I would say, actually talking to buyers, because they say stuff that, when you actually have a conversation with the buyer, you'd just be amazed at like, well, I was checking in on this. But boy, if you have one of these, I really am looking for this. So that's it, why you have like cans of soup on the shelf, right? They're walking into your store. They're asking like for like, what do you have? So if you only have like one counter that has two or three things to sell on it, like, I don't know, you either want to buy this or you don't want to buy this, right? But if you have a larger offering of like, well, it's funny you say that. I actually do have one of those over here. Like, come over to aisle number three here and like, let me show you what I have over here to tie in with that. I think that's really important for us. And also to understand, you know, the background too. You know, you're you know, you ran a restaurant, but you're trying to buy an insurance business. Like, talk me through, like, how did you get from there to here, right? And maybe they have a really good answer for it where they have somebody in their stable that, you know, it's just really experienced with insurance. And it was like, oh my gosh, like we got to do this. And, you know, they're the money person or whatever it is. It could be any scenario that you're talking about, but having those conversations versus just, you know, I don't want to deal with the buyer. I'll, you know, cause it can be like there's buyers that, you know, they're uninformed and that isn't 100% their fault because they just don't know what they don't know. Right. So, I think being a little bit more, forgiving in some of that and having good conversations could help you connect the dots, you know, with your opportunities.
It's fascinating because as you're talking about that, because I've heard about this, I've even written some stuff about the, you know, with your business brokerage business, your product is the businesses that you're selling, right? So because most brokers are on the sell side. And so your digital storefront is displaying your product, which is the listings, right? And some stores have a lot of product on the shelves and some don't have much of anything. But if I think about like, I don't know why, but like a jewelry store example comes to mind, where it's like a good jewelry store, everybody who walks through, instead of prejudging them, what they look like, how they're dressed, should they be there or not, talk to them, find out what they're looking for, and maybe direct them to and let's go over to this other display case, like, oh, you're looking for this. I've got that. It's over here. I've got this. I don't have that, but here's what I recommend. Right. All versus the jewelry store that probably most people have gone to. If you go to enough stores where they don't talk to you, they're standing in the back. They're just waiting for you to tell them what you want and or they're just too good or too busy to talk to you. Right. And so where's that balance, you know, of interacting? And of course, you know, it's going to be a lot of people looky loose that, you know, wasting time, but how do you manage that? Like, let's say you put something out there, you've got a listing and you're getting a ton of buyers, right? Like I hear of listing, you know, brokers that are getting, you know, hundreds of inquiries.
Yes.
Right. And how would you manage that? Or is that what the team is for?
No, it's that. Yeah. So there are some listings that we've like this manufacturing business, we've literally had 300 inquiries on this business. So we put in an extra layer of sort of, okay, you came in, you said, yes, I want information. And then maybe you filled out the NDA or the buyer profile. But then they're getting another email that says, thank you so much for filling everything out. We'd like to understand your background in this particular type of sector. Or did you know that this business is this, 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 and this? Because sometimes they're just moving so fast. They're like filling out whatever they, you know, they filled out 100 forms or whatever it is that they tied into it. And then the response, I think, is always very interesting. If they're very thoughtful about the response to say, hey, thanks for letting me know. Yes, I worked for 15 years in this particular manufacturing segment. I know, you know, it's like, okay, now we're having a conversation. Now it's like, okay, you really, or, you know, and anybody who gives this sort of general answer that's like, well, I'm building a platform. It's like, Okay, but to do what? Like, what do you mean you're building a platform? Like, well, you know, solid business that makes money. And it's like, okay, that's what we all want. We all want one of those. Like, that's good. So I think that extra layer of like, please not so much justify yourself, but sort of like walk me through why you're not just a general buyer. You're somebody that really thinks that they should, you know, be a part of this business. So that's important to us. And then there's the call that happens for us after that. Like, you came in, you filled out something. Then we kind of asked you for more information. And I'm almost wanting you to not respond, right? Because it's like, did you do the stuff we told you to do or not?
Yeah.
You know, and that's where you really, the rubber meets the road, where it's like, okay, now we're starting to talk to, the funnel's getting smaller, right? Now we're starting to talk to the people that we should be talking to about this particular listing.
Yeah. And I've always had that attitude when it comes to like marketing and a lead funnel coming in, but also hiring and recruiting as far as a funnel and steps, where the right amount of hoops will tell you who's interested and then weed out the people who are not, without making it overly difficult, right? Like, I don't need a 3-page report on this and all of these things. Just enough to separate people layer by layer, right? If you think of like a, you know, like a farm where it's like sorting things and it's just like getting better and better along the factory line, you know, until the final product. Like, how do you weed some stuff out? You know, pull the rocks out from the potatoes. It comes to mind, right? Like, let's just get to what we need, and then we can sort those. And I think that's valuable, because again, I think what I appreciate about you, which is not something I hear a lot of, is, you know, the value of talking to the buyers and what that could help with, what that could bring to the table, how you could help them with maybe another listing or maybe a referral to another listing that's maybe not even yours. Right now, we get into the co-brokerage world where there's value, and then also the market intel of like, what are people trying to buy, which then goes into your list that you gave us, which is like the sectors you're seeing like are moving well, right? Yes. Like, what's moving? And it's kind of, you know, let's get some survey data, some market data from the other side. And so I appreciate the fact that you, you know, seeing all those angles and running it that way. I think that's great.
Well, and they have they have money, they're looking for something. It's like they probably have their heart in the right place, or they're looking to buy something, but maybe they just need a lender, you know, or just a good attorney, or, you know, maybe they don't need a broker, right? They just like, oh, I was driving to there's a trade show that I went to this weekend, and this buyer, I said, hey, listen, if you see something that you like, and you're asking if it's weird or not weird, or there's something like, I'm happy to just bounce it off me. You know what I mean? Is this odd when this happens, you know, when I'm doing this? And I am more than happy to say, yes, no, that seems kind of odd. And it doesn't have to be my listing. It's just, I think there's just, again, I go back to that like misinformation out there where, oh, I have to pay this amount to like get any piece of information tied to anything. And I just preach like, just call us, like we'll talk you through it. You know, like I may not have all the answers, but I could probably give you a good sense of, just because we're in the market every day, that we could, you know, maybe provide some quick answers that you're not getting somewhere else.
And I think it's interesting. This would be a long discussion. We want to make this a much longer conversation today. But going back to what you said about the spray and pray, which generally is not a good tactic in your case, and how you're utilizing it is important, because you don't know what's going to work. You don't know what's going to get anyone's attention. So you've got to basically do everything, right? Is it the bus? Is it the bus bench? Or is it the billboard? Or is it the TV ad? Or is it the direct? Like, if you think about marketing in general, you never know. And so you kind of got to do all of it, right, at scale. And if you're going to put in that much effort to get people to reach out to you, even to get the business, to have the listings, to get the buyers, then just put in the effort to talk to all of them, because you never know like what's going to be valuable.
Yeah. And I would also say that I'm not, we track everything. So it's not to say we're just like, oh, whatever happens, happens, you know, I'll try anything once. Right. And I will track it quite in a detailed way, right? But that's part of like, oh, well that does kind of work. Okay, well, maybe we should add that into our mix here. You know what I mean? And then while we're doing all these things that we should be doing anyway, right? Because believe me, we every year at the end of the year, well, how many were actual referrals? How many were from direct mail? How many, you know, how many listing appointments do we go on to actually get the listing? I mean, there is data there for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel I had to say that because you're absolutely right. When you say like spray and pray, like it doesn't sound great. But I just think it's a lot of trying a lot of things and realizing that just based on where we get listings, it's never just one thing, right? I mean, there's just quite a bit that's tied into it.
So I'll add this on there to give it the tone of what you are going for too, which is spray and pray and track, right? It's right. Like, you know, not just throwing it out there. It's like, we're praying it's going to work, but we're going to track it and then we're going to optimize it. And again, this is, you know, it's just a short example for people to understand kind of like what we're both talking about, right? Based on what you're saying. And my experience is you can't, it's really hard to do attribution anymore of exactly what led to somebody reaching out to you. So yes, they saw your LinkedIn post, but did they get to your LinkedIn post? And then they also saw something, they got your direct mail piece. Maybe they got an email, maybe they saw an ad. Like, what was it? Like, yes, there's the final mile. Oh, how did you hear about us? Oh, I got this direct mail piece. But
right.
It could have been a ton of different things. Like when you watch an ad on TV, if you still do you call the number that's on that ad? Or do you do like me and just Google the company and the website? And then if you want to buy it, you buy it from there, which then makes the website team look amazing and the TV team look like they're failing. But that's not true because it's all of it. So exactly. You kind of got to do all of it and just see what the lift is over time.
That I think is when I worked in advertising for a long time. Everybody wishes it's the straight line marketing, right? I do this, I get leads, and it's never straight line. And they don't understand that like you're to your point. Well, I saw the TV ad two times and then I saw somebody else talking about it. And then I finally just Googled it myself. And so there's all that plays into it.
Or, you know, what I know too happens is connected on LinkedIn, posts this, that, meet somebody at a networking meeting. Okay, then the business comes from that. And it's like, okay, my networking meetings are what working, right? It's like, not necessarily, like, yes-ish for the last part, but not the whole, right? And same thing with referrals. Just because you got a referral doesn't mean referral sources are working in its own bubble. Like, there's a lot that goes into a referral relationship. And so I love the fact that you said you basically do everything, which, you know, of course, self-serving, that's what we help brokers with. But like beyond that, like just do everything, right? Like I think it's important at scale.
And find out what you're good at. Like if you don't like doing this, then hire somebody to do that other stuff and then focus on what you like to do. I don't know, you know, that seems so simple, but it's like, I'm struggling with that today. Like, you know, like there's only so many hours and minutes in the day, right? So you do have to start to figure out what makes the most sense for you.
Yeah. All right. Here's what we're going to do. I want to end the main part of the episode now on that high note. That's good. Before we get into the deal that got away, because that's going to feel like a downer after this great conversation, but we'll talk about that. Obviously there's silver lining. Plus I want to go through the standard after show questions with you, which I know you already talked. You alluded to technology and AI and all of that stuff. And so for Matt, for people who want to reach out to you, they want to chat with you, they want to talk to you, selling, buying, co-brokering, everything in that world, your links will be in the show notes. They can find you on LinkedIn, Matt Friscia, FRISCIA, also tworld.com/LaGrange. Obviously they can find you. I'm sure if they Google you, you will probably come up as one of the top Matt Frisch's out there. Any other ways that people should connect with you? Also, you have the YouTube channel, so we'll have that link in the show note as well.
Yeah, right. I don't think, to your point, I don't think anybody ever remembers phone numbers, but certainly you do. So I think the fact that you have the website on there, and then the general email that's really easy to remember is just lagrange@tworld.com, because at least it's like a name of a town, at tisatomworld.com. So you can always just, I get all those emails. So you can contact us that way as well.
And as you can tell, Matt is popular. He's getting a lot of calls while we're recording this, which is fun. Normally, I'd be like, hey, can you silence your phone? But I love it because, you know, it makes me miss being in an office instead of working from home, miss that energy and all that stuff. I don't envy the calls that you have to return just because I took up your time here today. And we have the after show. I'm going to be greedy and I'm going to steal a little bit more of your time. But Matt, I appreciate you being here. Thanks for everything that you shared and, you know, just being open and transparent about your journey through this world of business brokerage and what you see is working and, you know, kind of things that help people out. So thank you for being here, Matt.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And for everyone, make sure to come back for part two. It's going to be great. We're going to talk about the deal lost, got away. We're going to talk about some more the questions that I normally ask. Hopefully you got some value from this. It's been fun because I really love these kind of conversations, especially with the journey where someone, you know, had a business, struggled with selling it, got into this business, realized there's different ways to do it. And then also very abundant mindset. I really love that about this conversation with Matt about, you know, of talking to buyers and just being open to things and the co-brokerage mentality. I think that's all great, which is, you know, the kind of content I love to get out there. And for everyone, make sure you like and share and follow and subscribe and all of those standard things. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.